Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, we'll transformational coach and comedian, Craig Shoemaker.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Jack Sanders. I am Mark Leger, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Serendipitously, this morning, I had a trifecta of things come my way. One was a meme in a text form from Mark Leger early this morning that inspired me. Then later in the morning, I got to speak with our guest, Craig Shoemaker, and he inspired something else in me. And then, as I was pondering what I had read that Mark sent and what I had heard that Craig said, the voice of Jiminy Cricket popped into my mind. I don't think I've thought of Jiminy Cricket in, I don't know, decades. Jiminy Cricket, if some of you don't know, is a... the cricket, he's an animated character from the Disney animated version of Pinocchio from many, many years ago. So what did I get? So how did it all happen? What resulted from this? I think you'll see why this is very serendipitous. So Mark sent me a meme, and the meme was of Socrates. Socrates is a Greek philosopher, and this quote was attributed to him. If you don't get what you want, you suffer. If you get what you want, if you get what you don't want, you suffer. Even when you get exactly what you want, you still suffer because you can't hold on to it forever. Your mind is your predicament. It wants to be free of change, free of pain, free of the obligations of life and death. But change is law. And no amount of pretending will alter that reality. Okay, so then I was talking to Craig Shoemaker, and he was talking about how important laughter is in our life. And then I started thinking, after I got off the phone with him, about what Socrates said. And then when Jiminy Cricket came into my mind and the lyrics that were written by Lee Harline and Ned Washington for the song Give a Little Whistle, which went, when you meet temptation and the urge is very strong, give a little whistle. So put those three things together, and this is what happened. I took Socrates' quote, and I added Craig Shoemaker's laugh, comment, and I'm not going to do it in the voice of Jiminy Cricket, but this is what I got. The quote that's been now written by me, inspired by Socrates, Craig Shoemaker, and Jiminy Cricket. If you don't get what you want, laugh. If you get what you don't want, laugh. Even when you get exactly what you want, laugh, because you can't hold on to it forever. Laughter is your best tool. It helps you with any kind of change. When in pain, when the obligations of life get you down, even in the face of death, laugh. Because though change is law, laughter will alter that reality.
I would have never known that meme this morning led to all of this, because you know what I heard was crickets.
Ah, Jiminy Crickets, Mark. And then you and I were actually on the phone with Craig as well, and so much came out of that. It's like there's no way we're going to get it all in one show.
This is such a big topic, and Craig and what he's doing above and beyond the work that he's brought to the world through today is next gen. I mean, and it's something that the world needs so desperately right now. More humor, more laughter, but more transformation, more presence. You know, it goes off into other topics like the destructive humor that's used. And you know, we've talked about that in past shows, right? How the subconscious, and we joke, you know, or we kid, and that could be even more painful than things that we know are, you know, causing pain. So such a powerful conversation tonight.
Well, Unlock the Power of Humor for a Better Life and Success. That title of this episode is also inspired by Craig. This is episode 841 of the Life Changes Show, and we're featuring an award-winning stand-up comedian, an actor, an author, a writer, a producer, a transformational speaker, a two-time NATS Emmy Award winner, and we could go on, but let's bring him on. Craig Shoemaker, welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you so much. I think I want you guys to go on the road with me with that kind of that kind of synergy that you're expressing. I couldn't have said it any better myself. Good night.
No. Truly, you actually, I could have quoted you. Like, I'm just gonna have to say, you say something like, "We people meditate. Why don't they laughitate?"
Yeah,
I love that.
You know what? It was all inspired because my best friend got brain cancer.
Ah.
And they gave him 3 months to live. And that was my, I call it my ha-ha moment. Mm. And I started this program in a cancer facility. And I realized the jokes are very subjective. But laughter is not. Laughter is like breathing. Of course, these days, they'll probably try to cancel breathing because they're trying to cancel laughter. It's amazing to me. It's such a gift that we have, that we're bequeathed this beautiful gift of laughter. And children laugh 300 times a day and adults laugh 20, which is so ridiculous. So I showed up at this cancer facility and I developed these programs, one of them being guided laughitation and one of them being chuckle chatter, where you volunteer to laugh. Your body doesn't know the difference if there's a joke or not. Just like if you're on a Stairmaster or on a hill, what does your body know? All it knows is the effects of it. And the effects of laughter are so unlimited, what it can do to you. It shifts your consciousness, it oxygenates your body, and the healing endorphins are released. And so I developed this, and his name's Michael Goldberg. He wrote Cool Runnings, Little Giants. We always bonded through laughter anyway. And he showed up for all of it, all the prescriptions, which we'll go over tonight. He did all the chuckle chatters and all the guided laughitation, and he lived 15 years past the 3 month prognosis. And you mentioned death before. We had a funeral for him, not a funeral. We had a funeral.
Oh,
we made,
wow.
we made fun of him. We kept, and his daughter got to know him. He was supposed to die when she was a year and a half old. She was 17, spoke at the funeral, wasn't a dry eye in the place, but she got to know her dad through us and through laughter. So that kept him alive, just having the will to live. Nobody wants misery. So anyway, the reason I came up with the laughter rather than jokes is I was watching Patch Adams. He does wonderful work. But quite frankly, if someone showed up in my hospital room with a clown outfit, I'll pull the plug.
I'm
out. I'm out. Smother me with a pillow. Just give me a pill. Something. I do not like clowns. And that was the moment I said, "Wow, wonderful work." And it's good for some people. But laughitation, if you can meditate, it's actually easier to laughitate than it is meditate. I'm too distracted to meditate. I have four kids. And I'll be sitting there thinking, oh, I left something in the laundry. You know, I mean, something is always on my mind. And especially a creative mind. A creative mind, my mind does not stop. So it's really tough to clear. But during a laugh, you literally cannot be depressed. You cannot be angry. And you can't be resentful. You want to try it right now?
Sure.
Ready? Excuse me. Breathe in through your nose and let out a ha. Ha is very cleansing.
Okay, everybody do this with us out there in radio land.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want everybody to write down their stress level, 1 to 10. 10 is you're ready to fake your death and move to Bali because you have so much stress. And one is you're in complete and utter bliss. Nothing bothers you. So write down the number. And we always take that number down. And breathe in through your nose. Ha is a very cleansing word. Think about how the cleansing of whatever those thoughts and doubts and worries are, just let them out when you do a ha. And remember, it is a beautiful word. Hallelujah. You know, if you go to church, or aloha. And let that out. Let that beauty out. Ready? Here we go. Breathe through your nose and let a ha, right? Ha. That's it. That's it. Everybody go along with it. Just let out a ha. It's that simple. And don't let the silliness take you over. You know, those, what are you laughing at? All those slogans we've heard our entire lives that tell us not to laugh, which is ridiculous. So let out another ha, the cleansing ha. Ready? Ha.
Ha. Ha. Ha.
Ha. Ha. See, meditation, they say om. That closes you off. Ha.
Ah.
Release. It's a true release. Ha. Relaxes you. Just feel it, your body. And then we have fa, that's focused awareness. It's the mindfulness aspect of what we do. Think of what's going on in your body. Where's your tension? Where is it being released? Relieved? Feel that. Now we're going to go into a giggle. This is a real brief one, but just going to get it started. So we get our interview started, get us all loose. And just let out a giggle until the gas runs out of the tank. Ready? Follow me. Do it. It starts with a ha and let it roll right into a giggle. Ready?
Wait, what's a giggle?
Or a laugh. Just start laughing for the laughter's sake of it. Ready? Okay. Breathing through your nose and like, ha. Good. Let's bring in the ha again. Each level you go, you center more and more. The stress level goes. I've taken people from a 9 to a 2. And it happens every single time. It's how much you participate, you will get out of it. So that's how the meditation, the guided laughitation works. And we have chuckle chatter. We'll go to that as we go on with the interview. And it's all about shifting your consciousness to a place of meaninglessness. You realize he puts so much meaning into these things. And here's what I want people to write down. Write down what's really bothering you. What's your obstacle that's getting in your way of your bliss and your happiness? What's that obstacle that's there? Is it money? Is it the a tough time with your spouse or significant other? What is it? What's in your way of happiness and joy? And we're going to get to a place of enjoy. We're going to get inward and go to our joy spot. It's a hack to happiness to get there. So now think about that. Will you guys want to share what yours are? Is something that's on your mind? It's bothering you?
I wanted to ask, how'd you get so smart?
laugh. It's funny you should say that. I'm glad you said that. Because everything I say from my story, my life story, is to inspire. I never want anyone to feel sorry for me, because not only did I go through pain, but I transmuted that pain through laughter and joy and turned it into something really rewarding, including being smarter. And when I was in high school and growing up, I was very poor and impoverished. My dad left when I was born, like something I said, wah, he was gone. And he became a cult leader, and I was kidnapped by a serial pedophile when I was 13, tried to commit suicide. Even the suicide I laugh about, I tied these neckties. I came back from being kidnapped 5 days in Washington, D.C. in a ghetto hotel with this big, big pedophile. And I came back, told my mom, she says, don't you ever tell anybody. And you know, that's not something you tell people. I mean, it just leads to shame and suicide. You know, you just don't want to live. So I tied these neckties that my mom got me. I tied them around my neck. I made a noose that I learned in Boy Scouts, and I tied them over the door, and I tied them to the doorknob and put my neck in there. I started dangling and choking. And my mom walks in. And this is typical for my mom. She goes, oh, my God, what are you doing? Those are new neckties. Oh. I just bought those. Get up. I learned at an early age to just find the humor in everything. And there's nothing that is out of bounds for finding humor. So not only does that not bother me, this guy, you know, I learned forgiveness from this guy. I learned how to be self-aware from this guy. I learned how to get through fears from this guy. He does not have the keys to my prison. And I unlocked all of this. And now I get to teach other people that it's okay. No matter what you're going through, it's okay. And you'll make it through. But make it through. Don't listen to the people say you're not allowed to laugh at that and all those, you know, those messages that we've received since birth. So what I do is a reconditioning program with people, reprogramming them to be who we really are. We're born love, light, and laughter. That's how we're born. And then society takes over. And then we regurgitate the information that they hand us, and you get an A or whatever it is, but we're really not rewarded. We're rewarded for compliance, but we're not rewarded for being ourselves. And that's where we want to get to. So the thing is, you said smart, and thank you for that. I did not test well when I was a kid. I had no confidence, no dad. Obviously distraught, discouraged. My mom was always working. I raised myself pretty much. I got horrible grades. So bad, I had to have Tommy Taylor take my SATs. I paid him $100. Took my ID. Thank you, Tommy.
Thank you, Tommy.
He got me into college. I got a second start because I'm really messed up in high school. Drugs, alcohol. So I go away to college, and you know, I made the dean's list and stuff like that. But what happened was I believed every one of us is brilliant. Every one of us is brilliant. And then society takes over, makes us not brilliant because we're just listening to them, and we get into fear and all those things that they pound into us, even not to laugh. What are you laughing at? They say in Philly where I'm from. What are you laughing at? I'll give you something to – what are you – smile? I'll wipe that smile off your face. These are terrible messages that we receive. So I received this message from big higher source that's within all of us that said, no, you gotta keep making people laugh. I remember the first time, I'll just tell you one story real quick. Fourth grade, I was really miserable. I was beaten up a lot. We moved again. When I was a kid, I thought the word evict meant move. I thought they were the same word. Like, mommy, here's the eviction truck. And we'd pack up and go again. Well, we moved to the suburbs out of the city of Philly. And rich kids were very nasty. And plus, all of them had dads. I had no dad. And there was only one other kid that had a divorced family. So I'm in fourth grade, Mrs. Stout's class. And I started telling a story one day. It is after being humiliated. And I was like, they caught me sewing my pants. I only had one pair of pants. They caught me sewing. I learned how to work a thimble and a needle in fourth grade. And I was resilient. I learned resilience at a very early age. And one day I started telling a story about my mom beating me, actually. I could not believe the reaction of people, that suddenly attention. It was magic to see people laughing. I started exaggerating the story. I said, oh, she beat me. I was a pinata. I had candy throat coming out of my mouth. Oh, there's a Clark bar. There's a Clark bar. They're howling, laughing. It was one of the most beautiful days of my life.
Wow.
And transmuting that pain into something so pleasurable is making other people laugh. It's magical. So next day, Mrs. Stout, she says, he won't do this in my class anymore. And she locked me in a supply closet, tied my wrists behind my back with blue yarn. And she said, you won't get out off this box for a whole day. She kept me there a whole day. I ate lunch. That was it. She put me back on the box. And she said, don't get off the box. And I said, no problem. But meanwhile, I would get off and look at her thighs coming at me through the vent. I would jump back on. But a voice inside of me said, not only is she wrong about this, that I won't do it, I'm going to continue to make people laugh because it gives me the most pleasure I could possibly have. Is we're all connected that way. You connect in no other way through laughter. It's contagious. It's a beautiful contagion. And that was the moment for me. That was it. I said, and I've been doing it since high school. I've been paid to do comedy since high school. So
you have pretty cool. All different kinds of audiences. You tell different kinds of jokes. You do different kinds of, you do clubs. And of course you do corporate boardrooms and so many things in between. Do you feel that those experiences helped you connect with everybody pretty much?
You know, these days, the connecting with everybody is almost getting less because we're so scattered with social media. We have no attention spans. And there's very little connectivity. And that's why I'm trying to form these laugh mobs so that we are connected with that. That's the source of our happiness, is more laughter. So I've little groups that I formed, and a Laughter Heals Foundation, nonprofit, and my friend who had the brain cancer, it's in his honor. And it's just something that we need so much more of, but people seem to want it less with all the canceling, the offended people. And the comedians are fighting back now. I have a slogan: stop global whining. We just need to just stop it. The Karens and Carls need to shut up. And I also become Yoda sometimes. Offended you are, a crap I do not give.
Wow.
I mean,
That's right. You're an actor and a voiceover artist, of course.
yes, exactly. So, I do the voices to get back at people. Sometimes I want to turn into like Liam Neeson from Taken. I have a very special set of skills. Skills I've acquired over a long career. Skills that help me deal with jackasses like you. If you keep being offended, I will find you and I will kill you. They're all trying to cancel the comedians. People are afraid of us. They're afraid of the truth.
Well,
And I think we
actually,
should encourage comedians, right?
but here a couple things you just said. So earlier you were saying how your medicine, laughter is medicine. Laughter heals. Laughter keeps people alive. So potentially that's like the doctor job. Now you're bringing people together through laughter. That's like the guru and the community builder and the church leader job, and so comedians potentially are dangerous. I mean, in a good way.
Well, we're a danger to big pharma because they don't want you to know that we have our natural medicines inside of us and what laughter can do. I mean, look what it did for my friend. Look what it did for so many other people. It's just amazing. The data is there.
Yeah, you
All
have the
the things
data,
it
right?
does, it's mind, body, and spirit. Yeah, we have the number one neuroscientist. I have a new business called Laughter Works with an X, and we go to companies and corporations. I went from nonprofit to profit. I got to make money from this laughter. I got mouths to feed. I got four kids and ex-wives. All my shows and comedy are benefit shows this year, and all proceeds go to my
I'm
ex-wife.
sorry to
I'm
laugh.
just let you let you know. Your cover charge goes to Botox and Pilates class, folks. So, and that's the way I deal with it. Yes, it's a burden. Divorce is a burden. It's difficult, but the only way I can go through it is to find the humor, and other people relate to it because we all go through pain, don't we? And we identify with it. So that's what comedians do. We help you through. So big pharma is not happy with us. So, and the people that kind of like just follow that sort of thinking, we're bombarded with these things. But look at the news. The news is 100% negative, fear-based. I tell people the first thing I tell them when they come to my classes or my coach, don't watch the news anymore. Just done. Just go on the news fast. I feel fantastic. I've been doing it for years. It's tempting. It's the more people want to see an accident than see a boy help a grandmother across the street. That's just human nature. But we can shift that. We can shift it to more of the left. It's not going to be 24/7, obviously, but it's so much better to live like that. Live to laugh and laugh to live. So I don't understand why there's not more of it, but I do know why there's not more of it. It's not corporately sponsored. You look at the news. They might have like 1 second where some of them go, okay, over to Bob. Bob, there's a cat up a tree, I heard. Yes, that's right. That kitty couldn't get down. And, I mean, he's on his eighth life. Ha, ha, ha. And now back to death, mayhem, blood, torture. That's how they sell their ads. And look at the ads. They're mostly big pharma who give you these medications that have these side effects that make it worse than when you went in. And the medications are there to handle the anxiety that they just gave you with their news stories. That's the cycle. And then they have insurance companies. Mayhem. We know who Mayhem, Allstate, Flow, Progressive. We know all these insurance people. Imagine that kind of money that they're spending. They own buildings. Is that going to recovery? Is that going to help people? No, but laughter is nutritious. It's mind, body, and spirit are all engaged in a healthy way.
So we need buildings for comedians, for laughter.
We need a laugh lobby. There's no laughter lobby. There should be.
Or a laugh lab. So so things that we don't want to do, but what are things that we do want to do? We want to laugh, and we don't find a lot of things funny anymore, or we can get offended. And you're saying doesn't even take a joke. Right? Just laugh. I mean, that's one of the things you're saying.
Watch this. Okay. We're going to laugh together again and say out loud, I'm depressed. Okay. Just say while you're laughing. Ready? Do it with me. Ha, ta, breathing through your nose and let it, I'm depressed. In that moment, you are not depressed. You're not angry, depressed. You can say any word you want to insert the word, what you're stressed, resentful. You're not resentful. And that moment is pure, absolute bliss while you're laughing. And think about what it's doing to your lungs, your blood, your brain. You're pumping your blood. You lose weight when you laugh. You're welcome. If you want to lose a few pounds, come to my show. And, you know, I do a 2-hour show. I love being up there and performing comedy, but I'm actually kind of like shifting into something more global where I'm training other facilitators to go into these places and facilitate these things that these systems I developed where you don't need jokes.
So that's a system right there that you just guided us through, right? Actually, the one that you started us at the top of the show with, then this, could you throw one more at us?
Sure. Well, I teach three things. The seventh sense is the other one. It's unbelievable that we have these six senses. You know, the sixth sense, not many people know about that or explore that. But we really don't explore our sense of humor, which drives me just amazing to me. So I explore that seventh sense within everybody and find their voice, find their humor. And I take them through this whole program where they step aside from, you realize that school, I used to admire all these people with so many degrees, and I have degrees myself. But really what it is, they choose what you regurgitate. Does that make you smarter? Because I know 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue, Nina Pinta, Santa Maria were the boats. What good does this do me? What purpose does this serve in my life? None. I could do well on Jeopardy, whatever it is, right? Think about that. Mm. What we are taught is not useful to living a better life, a more fulfilled, happy, joyous life. And that's what we teach. Develop your sense of humor. You be funny. Everyone's funny. I've taught people, right now I'm teaching these four YPO, that's a young president's organization, very wealthy people. I'm teaching them how to do comedy for one night at a comedy club. They're all going to do 5 minutes of comedy. Or I taught, actually, I'm in Chicago right now. One of my guys, he's the number one mortgage guy in the country now. And he started as a crashing bore, but now he does great presentations. And he just brought me into Chicago to speak to a group. And he's amazing. And Matt Weaver is his name. And he's a number one in the country with mortgages. It's because he now knows how to find his sense of humor. I've been with him on retainer for 4 years. And athletes, it makes them. Here's something I want to point out. What do you think Patrick Mahomes, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, and Eli Manning, Peyton Manning, what do you think they all have in common?
All football players?
Football players, correct. But what else do they have in common that no one would ever guess?
Well, I'm going to say they hired you to work with them.
No, not at all.
Well, close. Maybe they should then.
Well, here's the thing. They're all funny. Oh. Think about that. They all have great funny commercials. I mean, Peyton Manning's a quarterback. He's hosting Saturday Night Live. Hosting. Who would ever have thought that years ago when football players were supposed to be so intense? These are Hall of Fame quarterbacks, the top of their game. But they loosen up that huddle, loosen up their teammates from being fun. And that's what I teach in corporations is be more fun at your corporation. People are going to want to show up. You'll be more magnetic. You'll be more approachable. People are going to do business with you because you're funnier and more fun. So I teach how the alchemy of laughter, how you can find your own sense of humor, your seventh sense. And that's something that you find your own voice. The voice inside of all of us is joy and happiness. That's love, light, and laughter. That's why I say you're born that way and until you get conditioned. So got to recondition. And that's what we're about right now. And I want to spread this globally. That's where the Funcilitators, I train other Funcilitators to spread this message out to the world.
Seventh sense. I have not heard that. You know, it actually reminds me, here's something. When we used to get together with Dorothy Lee Donahue and Mark Lejeune and a bunch of other people, and for the very first time we were giddy learning this stuff, but we were making fun of it at the same time, and I think we obviously must have learned more. But I would get so giddy that there was a friend of ours, I'm trying to remember who it was, that said Filippo just tapped into his clown chakra.
Oh, I love that. Oh, I love that. I
haven't thought about that in a while, right?
Oh, I love that. Oh, that is so perfect for us.
But you don't like clowns, though.
I told you, we're a line. Well, that's just another word for somebody fun and funny.
Okay.
You know, as long as you don't wear the big shoes and the red nose, we're good. We're good.
Oh, no, we're definitely a line. And this is another thing. It's like listening to you over the years do your comedy, like that, like how you would be able to take very serious and still do, obviously you did on the show today, things that were... that are very serious, things that are very hard, and you're still living life. I mean, getting to Chicago today, you know, that was a thing, and I know it. You still had to be a human, but there's a question there. So how do we? When's a good time to interject what we're learning here today with you?
Every day, as many times a day as you can. I have different ways. I'll give you another technique. Not to spoil it all. I'd love people to sign up for my individual coaching programs, but I will give you a couple cheats. These are cheats.
You've given us a lot, and actually this is a good time to say craigshoemaker.com is a good place to start. Craig Shoemaker, just like it sounds, .com. But he's on Facebook, he's on Instagram. But Laughter Works, WROX, and laughterheals.org. You've heard about this on the show already, but you can go to the Life Changes show page and all the links are there, or of course at any of Craig's pages. And we've got a video there as well. So check that out. That's Life Changes show for Craig Shoemaker. What were you going to say, Craig?
Well, here's a hack. Here's a real easy one. Because I watch people in the audience and some are very tense because we're not taught this. we're not taught this. And people are, they're even angry or resentful. Why am I doing this silly stuff? You know, don't be a fool. We've been had these messages since we were born. And many people get over it, though. Many people participate. It's really fun to watch. And I'm watching transformation. It's literal transformation. You can happen in 90 seconds in a snap. Most of these mindfulness programs or corporate programs, it take ages to settle in or set, and they still don't. People leave and then they quit. So I'm going to give you another tip. This is so easy. Tell people what's your favorite comedy movie and what's a quote from that movie. And I want you to observe what happens in the room that you're in right now. Mm. If people share that, a smile appears, either recognition, I agree with that, or, oh, I don't know that film, or they laugh at you imitating some line from the film. And just that can shift people on a dime.
Clever.
It's amazing to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your favorite comedy movie? Name one.
I actually can't think of one. I'm still thinking of more questions for you. Like I
because not letting you get away with it. And you're gonna come up with one, damn it.
I will before the end of the show.
I'll give you some prompts to one. Listen, it's gonna be funnier than Jiminy Cricket if you thought it.
It's the first thing that actually came to my mind. But I was gonna say, okay, you're talking to me. Joe, is that Joe Pesci? I'm trying to remember who that was.
No, well, you're combining. I think you're combining people. Are you talking to me as some taxi driver? Nothing funny about that movie whatsoever.
No, Robert but that's a funny line. Oh, it has to be from a comedy.
No. You might be thinking of Joe Pesci freaks out. What, am I a clown? What am I a clown?
Yeah, that's
what's so funny? What's so funny?
That's it.
Yeah, that's some Goodfellas. That was an amazing scene, but
No, but I have to say that we do within our family take lines. Actually, now that you made me realize that other one wasn't funny one, but we make them funny because we relate them as Italian Americans, and we use them. So for that matter, taking something that's funny to us, whether or not it was in a funny movie or what have you, and using it, like using some of these lines, bringing it into our lives, right?
Yeah.
But please go on.
Just like Jiminy Cricket, like you said, with Jiminy Cricket.
Just like Jiminy Cricket.
Jiminy Cricket, which I was trying to think of the lines that he said, but that was all about joy. And the
give
song
a little whistle.
Yeah, that's about joy. It's a lot of those songs. You know, the Sherman Brothers wrote a lot for Disney. Yeah. Make 'em Laugh was a beautiful. Ha, 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 I love to laugh and sing. Make 'em Laugh. Ha, 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 ha. I mean, all of those songs were about joy and celebration. But there's also the funny movies. Mine's Planes, Trains, Automobiles. That's my go-to. When he says they're in bed together, he goes, "Those aren't pillows." Oh boy, I lose it on that one.
You lose it.
And then Monty Python with the horses, with the the sound effects that they make with the coconuts. I mean, there's just one after another when you think about these comedy moments, and it just shifts the entire room. Once people start exchanging this, you can do this at work, and watch what happens. Then the films that they come up with, and then you go home and you watch the films you never heard of before.
Well, you've done funny things in shows: Parks and Recreation, Fuller House, Fresh Prince of Bel Air. I people might be quoting you, and for that matter, your TV show, or any of them for that matter.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think people would be quoting my Matlock appearances, Maybe Parks and Recreation. I played the head of the Liberty or Die party with a tri-cornered hat and knickers. And it was supposed to be the Tea Party. They made it the Liberty or Die. Well, I was Wilson Gromling for a couple episodes. But, you know, fun show to do, by the way. There's somebody who's all about fun. Is Amy Poehler is the boss. And she is so much fun. I remember one time we're on this parade float. And I'm from Philadelphia. And I've got this lifelong resentment about nobody in the history of film has ever done a Philadelphia accent. It just pisses me off. Even the great Robert De Niro in Silver Linings Playbook. It's a New York accent with a dropped R at the end. It really pisses me off. So I hear this guy is on the bullhorn. He goes, "All right, everybody, we're going to go back to our places now." And I said, "Hey, Philly." He goes, "How'd you know?" "How'd I know? I mean, how'd I know?
How could I not know?"
So then I get in this big rant. I said, I can't stand it. And then of all people I could have done, she's our boss, you know, Baby Poehler. She says, "I did one in Baby Mama." And sure enough, she's the only one in history of film that actually did a Philly accent.
That's funny.
And my friend Lisa Ann Walter does one on Abbott Elementary. but it's so rare. And yet, one of the other things I teach is, there's an acronym I go over. I'm not going to give you my whole program, but what do you have a hard time accepting? So that's one of those things. And that makes conflict. So that comedy is conflict. So what do you have a hard time accepting? People talking loud in movie theaters, for instance. So we share these little pet peeves and things like that. And that's what I go over that with people as well.
So where's the best place for that? That's at Laughter Works.
Well, after works or private coaching, I've got other classes. I don't know if I have any coming up, but I love the classes because then we share these things. And if I have enough people from your show that say, "Hey, make a class," I'll make a class just based on your show.
We might just have to talk, but this at least was a great teaser. Craig, just more power to you and what you're doing. Thank you so much again, Craig Shoemaker. Just like it sounds, craigshoemaker.com. And again, Laughter Works, and that's works with a K.
NX.
I mean, I'm sorry, NX. Oh, that, maybe I was being funny.
Well, K's are funny. I teach that too. K's are very funny. Kumquat. You hit me with a kumquat. Funny word.
Oh, man. Leave them laughing, Craig. Thank you so much.
And
thank
you.
Looking forward to more.
I can't wait to talk to you offline. We got lots of work to do.
Lots, indeed. And have fun out there in Chicago.
Join our laughter movement. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thank you, Craig. Craig Shoemaker. Man, Mark, you know, I'm literally laughing. My eyes are like.
You look completely different than you did at the beginning of the show.
It's true. Right? It's true.
It's a perfect example of the energizing, you know, that comes from laughter.
And I was laughing at myself too. I couldn't think of a funny movie.
That's not uncommon. But Craig's funny too. So
I quote a tragedy movie and say that's a funny line.
So inspiring. As we've said, we need so much more of this, and we need, and life changes a bit more of this as well. So this is a inspiring on many levels.
Yeah, actually, I didn't mention winning with laughter. I mean, that's another thing that he's got going. It's like people just need to check it out because we need this kind of thing.
Jiminy Cricket.
More and more. Yes. So anyway, and on that merry note, it's definitely time for our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Donna, and I have a large birth family, and yet I don't feel a love connection with any of them. They think I'm a little crazy because I am not into their religious beliefs and political beliefs. However, I have created a large circle of friends who feel like family to me because we are on the same page on almost everything. They come to me for advice because they think I'm more advanced than most and don't see me as crazy. How can I get my birth family to see me differently?
Precious Donna, you've already done something very powerful by creating a chosen family that aligns with your values and sees your depth and wisdom clearly. That's no small thing. When it comes to your birth family, it's deeply painful not to feel emotionally connected or understood, especially when there are fundamental differences in worldview. Trying to get them to see you differently can be a delicate dance, especially if their perception of you is filtered through strong religious or political lenses. So let's ask yourself, do I want understanding, respect, love, or all three from them? Getting clear on what you're truly hoping for can guide you how to approach them. Sometimes it's not about changing their beliefs, but about asking for mutual respect. And if you're hoping to shift their view of you, try engaging them in a way that shows curiosity about their beliefs, even if you disagree. This builds a bridge. For example, I've been thinking a lot about how we see the world so differently. I'd love to understand what shaped your perspective. When people feel heard, they're more likely to reciprocate. And please remember that when you're grounded and unshaken in your truth, without needing to prove anything, it often makes people reconsider their assumptions. This doesn't mean shrinking yourself. It means living out your values with dignity and consistency. If it feels safe, you might say something like this. Sometimes I feel like I'm seen as the odd one out in our family. I know we have different beliefs, but I'd love to feel more connection even if we don't agree on everything. Donna, I believe that vulnerability can open a door, though it won't guarantee a change. Sometimes families don't shift. That doesn't mean you failed or are unworthy. It just means their growth is on a different path. And let's remember that there are two kinds of families, the one you are born in and the one you choose. You've already found your people who see and love the real you. Congratulations. That's huge. These people are your soul family. And if your birth family doesn't change after your conversations with them as suggested, it could be good for you to let go of your need for them to see you as clearly as your soul family does. I lovingly suggest that you love yourself enough to allow them to be who they are, just as it is your desire they would do the same for you. If your sincere conversations don't bring about the changes you're seeking, I support you in lovingly finding ways to not engage or to only engage in the things that you feel comfortable with. I also believe that it would be a good idea to thank their higher selves for being in your life, because everything we experience serves a higher purpose and assists us in becoming who we have come to be. I look forward to hearing from you as you move through this situation.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, follow Jiminy Cricket's advice and let conscience be your guide, and write her at AskDorothy@LifeChanges.com.
And with that, it's time for our performance segment, and we have the pleasure of having today an award-winning guitarist, performing artist, recording artist, and a luthier, Jack Sanders. Welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. I really enjoyed that last segment. Laughter is the best medicine, as they say, and just a personal thing, when I think about how much I miss my mother, I think about what a great laugh she had, and it makes me feel good.
That's beautiful. So, thank you for sharing that.
My pleasure.
And music's up there too.
Yeah, music's interesting. Sometimes I think of music as a living history. You know, when I play a piece of music, like the first piece that I'm going to play that was published in 1536, you know, that's almost a 500 years ago. And the composer is long gone. He died around 1560 or 61. But I feel like when I play these notes, there's a connection with him. And people react to music both intellectually and emotionally. And there's no one way of appreciating a piece of music. And you can ask 10 different people who heard the same piece played by the same performer, and they'll have 10 different answers.
When did you know you were resonating with music in a special way?
You know, I started playing the guitar when I was 10, and I didn't ever think about making a career of it. Never. I always had this one thought. When I was 10 years old, I thought, boy, if I keep practicing, in 2 years, I'm going to be really good. And then when I was 12, I literally said to myself, boy, when I'm 14, I'm going to be really good. Mm. And I just kept that way of thinking. And it didn't really dawn on me until my teacher called me and said, Jack, I want you to come over to my house. And I had graduated from high school and I didn't know what I was going to do. I was taking business classes at Santa Monica College. And he called me over. His name was Peter Snyder. And he said, you know, Jack, I think you're in a situation like an athlete. And there's a time frame that an athlete has to commit themselves to their sport. And you can't decide when you're 35 years old or 30 years old that you want to become a professional athlete. And he said, the same is true for being a musician. If you have any interest in becoming a professional musician, you've got to start right now. You have to go to college. And I followed his advice. I went to CalArts. I applied to CalArts, got accepted, got my bachelor's and master's degree there, and worked really hard, insanely hard, and got some very lucky breaks. And here I am.
Well, looking back, and I know you work with students and actually you've taught and all of that, so you know, could you look back and say, okay, when did you turn really good? Was it when you were 14? Like, did you get a glimpse?
I'd say it was this fall, this past fall. You know, one of the things that I coach people on is the ergonomics of playing the guitar. And occasionally I get people, like I've had a flute player, a cellist, a couple of cellists actually, and a few other instrumentalists come to me because they've developed hand problems. And I try to help them. And guitarists, I've done Zoom lessons with people all over the world, and I've had people travel to come work with me. So I work with them on the ergonomics of playing. and I feel like I'm a shrink, shrinking their own brain. I feel like the things that I help them with, I work on constantly, and they help me improve as a player as well. So at the ripe old age of 70, I feel like I haven't lost a step. And it helps to have slow fingers, so then you don't really notice it when you are slowing down.
You're funny. But good on you. And of course, people don't know this, but you and I got to work together on the same stage when I was Master of Ceremonies for the Enlightenment Music Series, and you were performing. So thanks to Marina Manoukian, who introduced us and then reintroduced us, saying, "Why haven't you had Jack on the show?" I said, "Because I didn't. I never got his number, and I forgot his name." And here we finally are after all these years. But I did remember this. I actually, when that conversation happened, I said to her, "Isn't he the guy I was learning so much from?" "Oh yeah, always something to learn from Jack. Like he's always sharing something." So every time I've spoken to you since, always something new that I learned. And I'd love for you to share a little bit with the audience, because we don't know a lot of, have a lot of time, but they can, well, I was going to say they can work with you privately if they want, but they can't because you're too busy, I know. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But I'd love for people to learn a little bit something about this instrument that we see it's ubiquitous, but some of us don't know it's been ubiquitous for a long time.
Yeah, so I'll play a couple of pieces on what's called a vihuela. The vihuela was essentially the Spanish Renaissance guitar that was popular from, say, 14 to 1600. And the first piece that I'm going to play, by the way, I'll be playing an instrument that I built a couple of years ago. It's a copy of an instrument that was originally built around 1560. And the original is one of three vihuelas that everybody agrees are original. And this is a really beautiful one. Unfortunately, you can't see it, but we'll post photos on the on your website after when we do the archive. And you'll see the back, which is what we call fluted. And it's got a very beautiful sound. The strings are in pairs, except for the first string. And then we have three variations. The first one is very much in a choral style, so you'll hear the bass, the tenor, the alto, and the soprano. So there's three variations on that Italian song by Luis Milan.
Thank you, Jack. You're telling me this song is about 600 years old?
500.
500. 500 and something. And the guitar, not this one, but this is a replica of a guitar that is.
Yes, the guitar that this is a copy of was evidently built around 1560, so about 25 years after this piece was published.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. What are we going to get to hear now?
Well, let me play another piece on this instrument that was composed published 2 years later by Luis de Narvaez. And this is a very different kind of piece. This is sort of the precursor to the fugue that we associate with the Baroque period. So it's got a lot of imitation that happens in different voices. It's quite energetic and very complicated, but it's short. It's only about a little over a minute, 20 seconds. Thank you.
Nice. Jack Sanders, thank you. What is your experience when you find a piece or found this one? What does it do for you and now playing it and performing it? Why? What?
A great question. I feel like I never ever own a piece. I never feel like I've completely dug into it to the bottom of what the piece is about. This piece I've actually played for quite some time, and I feel like I'm still changing my interpretation. I'm still looking for new things, new relationships. This music that I'm playing is all written in what's called tablature. So it's just horizontal lines that represent the strings, and there's numbers that tell you where to put your left hand fingers. It's the same as what a rock and roll guitarist would call tap. And so the musical meaning is very abstract. It's just numbers on a page. And when I look at a piece that's written in traditional musical notation, I can understand harmonic and melodic relationships by how the notes work. And with this, it's much more abstract, and I actually love that. I love that about it. It doesn't tell you how long to hold your left hand fingers, doesn't help tell you how long to let a note ring after you pluck it. So there's all these variables that you have to figure out, and I love that.
Now you've recorded a lot, I know. These pieces in particular, or what? Because you play in all the genres, right? On
Yes.
guitar.
Yes. I have not recorded on these instruments, and it's a goal. Fortunately and unfortunately, I've got so much work in my shop between building instruments and repairing instruments that I haven't set a time frame to go into a studio and make a recording. But I do want to record these, and I do want to record them on my instruments. So how about if I switch to another instrument real quick? I
Yes,
know
as
we're
you do that, I'm going to ask you a question, and that is you just shared, and I actually shared by saying you are a luthier, and a lot of people don't know what that is. And how
A
did you get
luthier is a.
started?
Okay, so I started making things out of wood actually before I started playing the guitar. I made a sailboat when I was 7 years old, and sliced my thumb with a chisel because I wasn't supposed to be in the garage. But then in high school, I started building furniture. I was fascinated with the idea of making things. And I had no interest in making instruments until the late 1980s when I really wanted to have a vihuela. And a Baroque guitar, which is what I'm going to play next. So by the time I built my first guitar in 1995 and 96, I had built four kitchens, at least 100 pieces of furniture. So I had all the skill, and then I was curious what my instruments would sound like. And so that's what prompted me to build instruments. And I built over 120. About half of them are early instruments and half are modern instruments.
Jack, I've not seen your kitchens, but I can't imagine that they required the same kind of refinement and technique that's used for a guitar of like that caliber.
Yeah, they're a lot of work.
So what are we going to hear now?
So this is a Baroque guitar. Originally, it was made by Antonio Stradivarius, who seven of his instruments have survived. This is,
Guitars. He made
yes,
guitars too?
right. So this is the last known one that he built, made in 1700, and it's the most refined of all his guitars, and it's a beautiful sound. So I'm going to play a piece called a Preludio that was composed by Gaspar Sanz and published in 1697. This is also a this is a very free form, kind of almost improvisatory piece.
Thank you. you. This is fascinating. I just to be sure, the instrument you're wearing, you're wearing and performing with right now, that is the original, or that's a replica of?
This is a very exact copy of the original. The original is in a museum in South Dakota, of all places, the National Music Museum. I traveled there in 1999 to study the original, and I've made probably 30 copies.
Wow.
And this is one I made for myself a couple of years ago.
Wow. It does sound beautiful. Like wow. Okay. So you're showing it on camera right now. Quite amazing. So I imagine the specific wood and the way it's treated and all of those things taken into consideration.
Absolutely. Yes. What creates the particular sound of an individual instrument is design, meaning the shape, the size, how thick the instrument is, how thick the wood is, the construction design of how the braces are constructed. Craftsmanship is important. If the pieces fit together really well, that usually makes an instrument that vibrates really nicely. And the personality of the builder. There's something, if you took 10 great builders and gave them drawings and said, okay, build this exact guitar, and they all did pretty much exactly what the drawing said, you'd have 10 different sounding guitars.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, how much you clamp something, the order that you do things, all those things factor into how an instrument sounds.
And how you think of life and whether you laugh or not, or whether one's an angry person or not, I am sure that has an effect.
Absolutely.
We are going to get to hear another piece, I believe, or even another instrument, or what do we have?
Real quick, I know we don't have much time, so I would like to play an actual instrument from 1835.
Wow.
And this piece, this instrument was made by René Lacote, and it's especially valuable. This is owned by a friend of mine. This is especially valuable because the composer of this next piece that I'm going to play, Fernando Sor, signed the inside of this guitar. So this is a René Lacote from 1835, signed by Sor. It was considered the Fernando Sor model. And this has a really beautiful kind of boxy sound. Very warm. There's something that you cannot duplicate in musical instruments, and that is age. Age creates character like nothing else can do.
Mm.
And this guitar has been played by really, really good people. And I'd like to play, I know we have very little time, so I'll play the theme and just the first variation without repeats, if that's okay.
By all means, Jack Sanders, thank you for sharing that with us. Looking forward to hearing it.
So this is variations on a theme of Mozart. It's a very kind of childlike theme. And then I'll play the first variation.
Jack, thank you so much. I want to let everybody know Sanders, S-A-N-D-E-R-S, guitar.com. And Jack Sanders is all over social media. By all means, check him out. He's also got the, he's part of a foundation and all kinds of things going on. Jack, I'd like to ask you another question. Yes, we do have to go, but this is fascinating. I hope that you share, like we talked about, some blogs for our website, but also that you might consider some kind of a mini series of sorts that you could record or video yourself online showing us these instruments and then talking to us about them in ways that probably very few people in the world know. Tell us one of the things that I'd never heard before. One of the instruments was tuned differently than any guitar I've ever heard or any stringed instrument I've ever heard of.
Yes. So back in the day, the original of these instruments would have had gut strings. And gut strings are very difficult to make a thick diameter that's suitable for bass strings. And so they generally avoided that whenever possible. So the original guitar from the Renaissance had four pairs of strings and was tuned like an ukulele. Whoops. My dog has fleas. And then, the vihuela died away and the Baroque guitar or the Renaissance guitar grew and they added a fifth pair of strings. So this has what we call a re-entrant tuning. It goes from the bottom string, it's an A, and then it goes to octave Ds, then G, B, E. It's not the lowest string going up to the high string like a modern guitar. And this is the way the Baroque guitar or the guitar was strung up until the late 1700s, at which point they started using wound strings, which were kind of a new invention. And then they started getting rid of the double strings and playing six single strings like the modern guitar that we have today.
Wow. Fascinating. Jack, thank you so much. This has been brilliant.
It was a pleasure.
Pleasure is ours, and a big thank you to our performance guest, Jack Sanders. Again, check out sandersguitar.com, S-A-N-D-E-R-S, or look for Jack Sanders on the socials. We also have a video for him and much more information. Check it out at the Life Changes Show. Another big thank you to our interview guest, Craig Shoemaker. What a pleasure having him on as well. Well, that is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer, Mark Leger, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.